Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome to Activate Yourself with Geeta Sidhu-Rob, where we feature otherwise normal people who, because of events in their life, have turned left and done unusual, inspiring, incredible things, like build a business, become a happiness expert, marry a prince, create an empire, or, like your host, set up a health and wellness business, Nosh Detox. Here's your host, Geeta Sidhu-Rob.
Hi, my name is Geeta Sidhu-Rob, and this is Activate Yourself. And I am so grateful that you are joining me again today, because our goal is, as always, to say, you know what, it doesn't matter what's happening in life, because in every step of every part of the world, no matter what the hell is going on, there is one person who has said, you know what, I know life isn't perfect. I know it's not going the right way. But just because it's not perfect and because it's not going the right way, I am going to turn left. And in that space of turning left is my superpower. And so today's show, like every single show that I do, is about interviewing somebody who's amazing and interesting because something shitty happened to them. Something terrible happened to them. And they used that something shitty and terrible to make something amazing. It's all about what life gives you, lemon, make lemonades. I'm a bit over that phrase, but my life did that. Your life can do that. So let me help you to understand and inspire you to understand that there is another pathway that you can follow, and that when it doesn't feel good, that's that other pathway opening up. So let's get right with it. So today I've got the amazing Ronnie Littlewood, who is wearing the nicest lipstick. Hi, Ronnie. Welcome.
Hi, Geeta. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate this.
No, it's such a pleasure. I mean, and I was laughing before we actually came on air, because I was like, the thing I particularly liked and wanted you on was when you said I wasn't always a good wife, because I laugh about the fact that I am constantly telling people that I just think I'm a shit wife. And so what you do is that you help people to save their marriages.
Correct.
Now, before we start talking about how and why and where, yep. I have a question. I always feel, and I feel like this is wrong, but I always instinctively feel like it's women that want to save marriages. Is that wrong?
In my practice, I do see men, but it's funny. The soft-hearted men, the kind men, the loving men, the men who are desiring to save their marriages, usually are with the women they shouldn't be with. So it's not always just the women who are trying to save the marriage.
So it is, but it's more generally more often the women that come in?
Generally, I would say, and when I look at my socials, it's 90% women, for sure. I am speaking almost exclusively to women most of the time.
Why is that?
Well, I think it comes from our kind of nurturing hearts, our willing to bend over backwards, our ability to give love and receive love, where men tend to be more fixers, more providers. And so they think, you know, if the house is running and the kids are fed, it's good enough, without recognizing, no, we need more.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and also because you always hear, and I don't know how much of a truism it is or not, you always hear that women will leave because they don't like the marriage, but men tend to leave because they've met someone else.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And it's funny too, because it's kind of like a plant. So if you put a plant in a dark room, that plant is going to die without sunlight. Yep. But if you open a window, and it doesn't matter which wall that window is open, the plant will grow towards that light. And it's very similar in marriage. If I am stuck in a lonely, dark marriage, especially for men, if they're not receiving touch, because most of men's really love language is touch. And all of a sudden somebody's like, hey, how you doing? I see you. I'm here to talk to you. Boom. They are so attracted to that light that's what ends up making them take steps to leave their marriage.
Yeah, because it suddenly becomes unbearable to stay where they are.
Absolutely. Where women will leave just for the fantasy, just for the hope of receiving that same kind of light.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay, so tell me about you. Tell me how you got to think that you may not be a good wife. Well, tell me the journey.
Oh, the journey is long, Gita.
Okay, we have a half hour, so we'll have this Cliff Notes version.
All right, Cliff Notes version is that I was, so I'm from Canada. You're talking, I'm in Canada right now. And I had a very different experience than most kids in that I grew up in a very, very dysfunctional household, a single parent household, where I moved 28 times in my childhood, which
was insane.
Yeah, it's like from city to province. And Canada's pretty big. It would be like going to France and Scotland and Ireland and England. Mostly, I think, because of dysfunctional relationships and the pursuit of love. And so as a little girl, I kept watching this pursuit of love and how toxic and dysfunctional it could be, and this romanticized idea. But of course, when you incorporate violence and addiction and mental health in that, it creates chaos. And so during those 28 moves, I went to 18 different schools. And so I was always the alone kid. And I'm an only child too. So it was a very alone experience. It was always meeting new people, and whether it was a big city or it was a tiny nothing of a town. And always just that, always feeling like an outsider, literally my entire life.
You're
feeling
always like an outsider.
Always the observer, and really just wanting this concept of what I thought everybody else had. And so it was a parallel between this kind of chaos and violence. And then as a kid watching the Cosby Show, and thinking that that's what love and family should look like, even though now we know that was BS too, right? So that motivated me, and I started a journey. I went to university, became a social worker, hid behind my letters, hid my shame, wanted to just be like everybody else, didn't want to be like this messed up person. And I actually ended up going into a career in child welfare, did child welfare for 16 years.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
And for 16 years, still hadn't told anybody, hadn't told a single person about what my experience was. But I kept looking for a kid who had like a similar background as me. And I never found it. Oh, and it kept weighing on me. And the whole time during this journey, Gita, it's the funniest thing, but it felt like a tap on the shoulder. And then the tap on the shoulder felt like a screaming in my ear that I needed to teach people how to give and receive love. Because not only during my childhood had I seen so much violence and chaos, but then in 16 years of watching families in poverty breaking apart and all these children who are abused, I realized that most people don't know. They don't have a freaking clue how to give love and how to receive love. And one of the things that I teach my people every single day here at the clinic is that, and this is, put this on my gravestone, Lord, love is energy. And love is energy that we give away. And Gita, nobody wants to give away energy. Everybody wants energy because I'm tired and I work too hard and I got kids and I got to cook dinner and all this shit. But nobody wants to give energy. And love is energy we give away in touch, talk, time, acts of service, and gifts. And so that's where I started. I started my mission. And my mission became to save 1 million marriages. And that's kind of how I kind of, that's the very Cliff Note version of how I got here today.
So how did you get from the social working and the welfare with kids to marriages?
Well, I mean, when you're working with families, and you're in their homes trying to teach them that, you know, hitting is bad and drug use is wrong. And, you know, you got to have more in the fridge than just beer and eggs. I recognize that in a sense, these families were not so different than me. My difference was that I had intellect, which was a blessing, and I had the privilege of an education. And if I could be taught these things, why couldn't they? And so when I realized that I could literally stop being the authority, and instead of really creating life change, even in the population that's probably oppressed the most and has the most challenges, then wow. What could I do with people who weren't in the system and who wanted actual help? And boy, that really exploded me and excited me. So I was terrified, but I'm like, I was turning 40 years old and I'm like, shit, you got to get off the pot here, kid. If you're going to do this, you're running out of time. And so that's what kind of motivated me to start moving from that social work role and more into the therapist role. And now, because I've done this for 7 years at my little clinic here in Ontario, I'm taking it to the world. I'm putting on a life coach hat now because I truly am meaning to save 1 million marriages, even though every journalist I've said that to goes, really? Really? If you're crazy enough to think you can change the world, you're crazy enough to change the world. I believe that.
I mean, I think that if you're crazy enough to think you can save the world, you're crazy enough to save the world almost already, aren't you? Yeah. I'm a fan, unless that's exactly what you said. So at which stage did you get married?
Very young. I met my husband at 18 and went from the home of dysfunction into the new marriage. I was married by 21, had a baby in university, and really came in like as an emotional toddler, not having no idea, falling apart, having catastrophic reactions, and probably the world's biggest ego, because ego is meant to protect us from pain, right? It's our coping mechanism.
So we're going to take a short break. Mm-hmm. And then when we come back, I'm fascinated by the idea of your marriage. So we'll just take a quick break.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So we're back. So did your marriage survive this process?
Yeah, we're just actually 30 years this year.
Well, that's pretty amazing. So when did you work out that it was your shit that you were struggling with and not always being able to blame the other person?
I think it happened in my 40s, in that I finally had to stop hiding behind all the letters in my name. And actually, to be honest with you, it started in the funniest way. I would have never expected it to start. I got invited. I was at, like, you know, when you're at your agency and they're doing a work training, and one of the work trainings they did was they made us all stand up in a line, and it was like, take 2 steps forward if you went to university, take 1 step forward if you had to use the food bag, take 3. And it was one of these games, and I never played it. I was unfamiliar with it. This was, at least a decade ago. And there was about 200 people in the room, and everybody at the end of the game was in front of me, and my back was at the wall. And I, for the first time in my life, I was so exposed, and I didn't expect to be exposed that way. And I thought I was going to throw up in front of everybody. I was just, because it shocked me. And then I was like, wow, girlfriend, you got some work to do. Girlfriend, you got some work to do, because there's no shame in pain. Pain is a human condition. Every human being has pain, but I held so much shame around my pain that I couldn't even talk about it. So that led me into finally doing the therapy myself and opening up all those boxes.
Did your husband know about your childhood?
He did. He did. And he was just like, oh, that's fucked. Like, he's a man, right? So, but he, believe it or not, he was helpful and loving and nurturing and supportive throughout the way, but just always thinking he had a very probably emotional and irrational wife. I can imagine one that had to be handled with kid gloves, one that couldn't take criticism without falling apart.
So did your marriage need saving, or did you want your marriage to become better and you not be a problem in it?
I just wanted to give my kids a different experience than I had.
That's true. How did you know what to give them?
When I was very young, it probably was from television, from what you see on TV of what people are.
Yeah.
But I was always a voracious reader and I read and learned as much as I could. And it took me a long time. I'll give you an example. I was in a child development class, probably second year in university. And I remember that the prof said that it was really abusive for children to drink with their parents. And I was sitting in the first row.
Alcohol,
because even by 11, I was getting, there was many times where I got drunk with my parent. And so it took me a long time to recognize how abused I was or how poor my framework was. So I had to really turn to education and turn to others. And then in the child welfare years, I turned to foster parents, Gita. Oh, the foster parents, they taught me more about parenting than probably anybody else, because they could take these kids, these fire setting, sexually acting out, animal harming kids, and love them and value them.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it was a mixture of all of that, right? They were the ones who ended up, because I had two birth children, but then we actually ended up adopting two more children. So I have four. And it was always their guidance that led me to knowing what kind of family I wanted to create.
Did you ever worry when you got pregnant so young about whether or not you would emulate your mother? Or did you always know you would never do that to your kids?
I was always worried and I always knew I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Because for me, it was but there's danger in that too, Gaeta.
Yeah.
Because I think those first 15 years of raising the kids, and my kids are adults now, it was always putting everyone first and me last.
Oh,
and that
well,
kept me sick.
Womanhood.
Right. And it was never healthy, right? That I would overabundantly pour everything of my cup into them and never into myself. And it wasn't until I got on my own healing journey for myself and for my marriage that I learned, no, kid, you got to love you before you love anybody. And I think that was probably the most profound epiphany I've had throughout all of this, when I have pain, I have to love my pain and not punish my pain, which I did most of my life. And I see most of my clients continue to do so too.
So did you continue to have a relationship with your mother at this process?
I actually haven't had a relationship with either of my parents, one for about a decade and one for about 5 years, because the abuse and toxicity just became too much. And to be honest, Gita, this is the first time publicly I've even talked about it. But there was something about your story that I thought, and what your mission is. And I thought, if my pain can help others heal their pain, then I'm bringing it forward, finally.
Good. I'm so pleased to hear that. Because I think that we often have to say things for us to hear them. I very rarely think, I remember I was saying this to my daughter. My daughter's doing a presentation at university today, and she's traumatized. And I was trying to tell her stories because I speak in public like almost every week. And I was saying to her, you know, I agree with you, because I rang a girlfriend of mine up about 7 years ago. And I said, oh, my God, I've got to go inspire people. I don't know how to do that. What do I do? And she's very famous. And she was like, don't be an idiot. Phone me afterwards. We'll go for a drink. And I hung up on me. And I was like, that's rude. Cow. And so I was trying to say to my daughter that when you stand up and speak, don't think about them, think about what you need to say. And that is a mantra that I have lived with for a very long time. And so that's what I'm hearing you do, because you do need to hear yourself say the things that you need to hear, because who else can say them, right?
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. But boy, does it take balls.
Yeah, right? Terrifying shit. It's like waiting for the meteor from heaven to come and go, bzz, you did.
For sure.
That's really interesting. How much do your children know about this?
They know the whole story, and they've been there. They've supported me on my journey. They love me. They still know that even these days, holidays are still a bit of a trigger for me. It's hard because it's all about family and love. Same with like Mother's Day, Father's Day. Those days are hard. But what I've learned is that if I can just abundantly love myself on those days and love that inner child, then that's enough. And I'm okay with that.
Because it's everything, isn't it?
It's 100%.
So when people come to you, I want to know where you start with that.
Okay.
Because I know, like, I coach women, and I always start with trying to identify with women where they're suppressing their inner womanness, because there is a part of them they're always treating as a second-class citizen. And the more successful they are, the more you guarantee there's a part of them that's all tied up and locked up and suppressed. And it's where the massive discomfort comes from, the separation between how they show up and how they feel about themselves, right? Sure. Which is, and the more successful women are, you can't say to them, there's a part of yourself that you're just not treating very well, because they're like, hell with you, words to that effect. So we're going to go for a quick break. And then if you can tell me where you start, I would be utterly fascinated.
Okay.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So we're back. So where do you start?
It's three words. I always start with the same three words. They are sick, scared, and hurt. Okay. So I want you to think for a second. Actually, you can invite your viewers to do this too. I want you to think about every person who's been there for you, every person who's had your back. When things have been tough, when your house is burnt down, when you've been through a massive surgery. The people who've been there for you when you've been sick, scared, or hurt are the people that you feel most attached to. Mm-hmm. Because when we're sick, scared, and hurt, if we receive love, empathy, and support, that always creates a strong attachment. Now, I want you to think about the people you hate, the people you can't stand, the people you couldn't even sit on a couch beside. Chances are those same people created feelings in you of sick, scared, or hurt. Because when you react with anger, annoyance, or just plain, I don't know what to do, withdraw, you break attachment. And so I set this up. I literally have the couple in front of me, and I say, there's a rope around you. And every time you give love, love, empathy, and support to sick, scared, and hurt, you're going to make that a really strong rope. But every time you get angry or just annoyed or I don't know what to do and withdraw, you cut that rope. And there is only so many times you can cut this rope before it permanent breaks. And when attachment breaks, Gita, it's not crying. It's not anger. When detachment breaks, it's hollow. It's empty. It's go have a good life. I just don't want to be with you anymore.
Yeah, it's a disinterest and detachment.
Absolutely. And so getting couples to recognize art when he's sick on in the bathroom, or when he's scared about money, or when he's hurting about you constantly rejecting him for sex. How are you reacting? Are you being angry about it? Are you being annoyed? Are you just ignoring him? Because you are breaking attachment, sister. And getting them to recognize, what am I doing to fuck up my own relationship? Yeah. Because everybody always thinks it's the other person because you're not giving enough energy, right? And giving
the thing I find interesting is that when I'm coaching the women that I work with, I am constantly shocked by women that are in marriages that they claim are functioning and happy, and they haven't had sex with each other in years.
I'm shocking.
Like, what the hell?
Yeah. I don't understand. And maybe some people don't have, but usually there's probably one unhappy partner there. She may be fine with it, but I can guarantee you he isn't.
Oh no, he's dying.
Well, he is, because here's an interesting fact, fun fact. It's a sex fact. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
when men make love to their women, they release oxytocin. That is the hormone of love. Okay. Yep. But women don't release oxytocin during sex. We release it before sex. That's why we need the flowers and the candles and the compliments and all that shit, right? To feel love. So women need love to have sex, and men need sex to have love. And it works great when it works together and terrible when it works apart, right? That's why, guys, you can't go and just squeeze your boob while she's doing the dishes, because you're never going to get any that way. Right.
No. But I always say that as well to my clients. I'm always saying to them that when you're angry with a man and you withhold sex till he has the conversation, it's the wrong way around.
Yeah.
Because if you have sex with him, he'll have any conversation you want, because Amen. You're now reconnected.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's never about the orgasm, you know, it's never. If he takes care of himself on, you know, the internet, he's not going to release oxytocin. He does that because of you, because he loves you.
So all this work and knowledge that you gained, how did that help your marriage? How did it? Because it sounds like your husband wasn't complaining. He was supportive. It was you that decided you wanted to do this work.
He's always been supportive. And I think he loves me unconditionally. When I'm sad or angry or irrational or hurt. And what my challenge and learning journey has led me to is the letting go of ego, admitting when I'm wrong. I love that you let me swear. So I have two sayings, and that's I'm fucked up and I fucked up. I say I'm fucked up when I'm not doing well, when I'm having mental health, when my thoughts are racing. So I need more love, and I fucked up if I screwed up or I said something wrong or I was insensitive or I rejected you, and I'm going to own my shit, right? And I find those two sentences can free you from almost any situation of conflict, but you got to own it. It can't just always be him. And sometimes you got to start first, even when you feel like you're wrong. Because guess what? Guess what, women? Just because you're hurt, just because you're angry does not mean you're right. And every time I'm hurt or angry, every single time I think I'm right. But logic tells me there's no way 100% of the time that I can be right. And when I'm hurt or angry, that's just ego.
Exactly. And there's a place where it's the conversation, the coaching call I had just before we spoke was with a lady. And she said, you know, my college roommate and her husband just fight all the time. Mm-hmm. And she keeps ringing me to tell me how terrible he's doing. And I don't want to have that conversation with her anymore because I don't want to be part of this. And she's like, last night he packed his bags and stormed out. And she was like, well, good. You know, now you have space to think about whether you want him back. And then he came back, but wouldn't sleep in the guest room. And I was like, you know, I have memories of like really toxic marriage like that, and why do we stay in these terribly toxic marriages?
Fear, and mostly because we don't deserve better. We think we don't. Yeah. Or we want to change him or make him better. Every single woman, every single one who is in an abusive relationship loves their abuser. They love them, right? And they make a choice.
Do they love them because they abuse them, or do they love them because they prove to them that they're not good enough? Well, they're just used to it.
Maybe all of the above. Yeah. I love the good in you, and I want to ignore the bad in you, because the good in you is enough that's all I value myself for. And if I could just make you good all the time, then I'll just keep trying, right? Without recognizing that.
Back at the marriage I had with my children's father, mm-hmm. and I cannot believe how low my self-esteem was that I accepted and allowed, you know, what happened in that marriage. And it wasn't even a very long marriage. It was just spectacularly shitty. And it was all okay because that's, well, it wasn't okay because it was painful and horrible and nasty and mean and all this stuff. But I was there, right? And I look back now and I'm like, wow, that's so interesting.
But you don't know what you don't know. And it took leaving for you to realize what is my worth and what am I willing to accept and how do I hold a boundary, right? Because it's very hard to hold a boundary when you're treated like shit. Because nobody's respecting your boundary, right? And so we just keep moving that, you know, that line in the sand.
That's exactly right. I think that what we do in marriages is we constantly and continuously move our line in the sand of what is acceptable. And we do it for whatever reason. Oh, he was feeling bad, or I'm this, or oh, my periods, or the kids aren't old enough, or whatever. But all you're doing. But you know, boundaries are to me a really interesting thing. I always feel that you never need to learn a boundary when you know what you will and won't accept. Mm-hmm. Because that self-knowledge in itself creates a boundary. And when you have to create an artificial boundary, it's because there's a place where you still need some support in that idea.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. But it takes practice. And so I encourage people, start small. Start every day. You can't just go in and say, this is how it's going to be now, because nobody's going to listen to you. So just try to practice and you get better at it.
What are those steps that they should take?
For boundaries? Mm-hmm. Then like I would.
Or whatever. What do you want to leave people with thinking? There's few things that they can do.
I would give. You cannot get love until you give love. And you give love by touching him, by talking to him and asking him how he feels, by giving him a coffee, by spending time with him and maybe making him a meal or doing something for him. It is an act of service and it is an act of gifts of energy. That's when you start to receive back. But if you just sit there being your empty cup and angry and resentful, it ain't going to happen.
But what if I'm really angry?
Then you need to sit down and talk to your pain and find out why you're angry and what needs to change, right? And stop punishing your pain, but be willing to love it and have some compassion about what a shit place you are in.
I love that. That is a fantastic way to finish this. Thank you. That was a really lovely and unexpectedly deep conversation. I really enjoyed it.
I did too. Thank you.
Where can we send people, Ronnie, to learn more about what you do?
Well, I'm just starting a new business. And it's called, you can go to www.1millionmarriagessaved.com. Same 1 Million Marriages Saved on Facebook and Instagram. And we haven't even launched. So there's going to be freebies available for those out there.
Amazing. Thank you very much for all the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Gita.
My name is Gita Sidhu-Rob. This is Activate Yourself. Thank you so much for joining me. And I hope that Ronnie's story gives you a concept and an understanding of how inspiring humans really are and what you can achieve, even when you didn't know that's what you were trying to do, but you just learned along the way. And you got better at being yourself and you loved yourself more and you achieved more within yourself. Because I think that if you can start from Ronnie's incredibly, I think, really painful beginnings and you see where she is today, hopefully that will give you hope because it inspires the crap out of me. I look forward to having you join us all again on the next show. Take care and thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Our goal was to give you pause, make you think about your life, and inspire you to say, wow, what if I tried to do that? If they can do it, so can I. Did it work? Let us know by finding us on social media at Gita Sidhu Rob or at Nosh Detox. We upload new shows every 2 weeks here. And if you start to miss us, check us out on YouTube.